Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me today for this week's edition of SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup. This live chat will cover three topics from this past week's news, of topics of interest to international educators in the U.S. and abroad. And we'll feature some commentary from myself regarding where I think these developments are leading in terms of overall strategies for international educators, particularly on the recruitment side, and looking forward to conversations with you and maybe some discussion on these topics and how you see these issues impacting what you do and how you view international education in this landscape today. So we hope to and look forward to this discussion this afternoon. For those of you who have not been with us before, these episodes last generally about an hour, or excuse me, half an hour, and we'll cover the three topics, inviting your comments, obviously, on the different parts of the topics that we're discussing. Today, we're going to be featuring some commentary on three different topics, one related to ASICS, the troubled accreditor in 2016, was actually shut down by the Obama administration. There's been a couple of conflicting stories on this in the last couple of weeks, so I'll be sharing my thoughts on that. We're also going to cover the absolutely incredulous thought of a Chinese student ban that was proposed, but thankfully shot down by the current administration. And then finally, we're going to look at a little bit more of a global issue and actually some remarkable information coming out of the UK, report on their transnational education trends. So we'll be covering all of that today in this week's Midweek Roundup, and looking forward to discussions with you. If you're wondering what SMIE Consulting is, that's my business I started 4 years ago to help me better relate to and help my colleagues in the international education field deal with the current issues that they were facing in their jobs, and lend some of the expertise I've gathered over my 25 years in the field to help inform and improve, hopefully, some of what you do when you recruit international students, when you put together partnerships and are engaging abroad. So hopefully these discussions today will provide useful to you. For those of you who have been coming to these sessions before, thanks for coming back. As I always do, I'll put the links to the stories that I'll be referencing in today's Midweek Roundup in the comments section of the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting, and look forward to either your comments there or down the road in future sessions. So, first off, ASICS reprieve, but maybe not. This came up, for those of you unfamiliar with ASICS, it's one of the national accrediting agencies in the United States, and one that has typically been accrediting less than academically demanding institutions. That's not the politest way I can think of putting it. Technically, these are mostly career and vocational colleges that ASICS approves. The ones that they are approving have approved in the past tend to be in the for-profit sphere. Those who followed the education department's leadership in the last couple of years have realized that they are very much pro for-profit educational enterprises. So they have actually backtracked a little bit on ASICS. ASICS had accredited as part of its membership in the past a number of Visa mills that had been used by for-profit enterprises to basically bring international students in, not have them take any classes, but just provide them CPT work opportunity, curricular practical training work opportunity for area businesses near where, or maybe nowhere near where the college was technically located. So these Visa mills that had been shut down over the past, you're familiar with some of those stories, I assume. But these Visa mills are really some of the worst offenders when it comes to taking advantage of international students who have a dream of studying in the United States, taking their tuition dollars and really farming off to do entry-level kind of work for businesses around the country that don't know really what they're actually doing or taking in. And that's a real problem, I think, because it really puts a rather large black eye on U.S. higher education and the government for allowing these kind of institutions to exist in the first place. And it's a multi-layered problem because it's not just the accrediting agency's fault for accrediting a school that is being using international students as a visa mill. But it's also the fault of the Department of Homeland Security that gives approval to these institutions to issue the documents that international students then use to enter the United States. So ASICS is a huge problem, and frankly, one that we had thought we'd seen the last of them with in 2016, one of the last Obama administration's acts for within the Education Department was to basically give the death sentence to ASICS as an accrediting body, and many of its ASICS members were forced to search for alternate accreditation, and in the end, a lot of the ones that had been kind of not on the up and up in terms of legitimate institutions did close because they weren't able to secure other legitimate accreditation. So the challenge is now with this current administration. The story that I've just posted the link to actually seemed to be a rather awful story, that it was the current Department of Education decided to allow ASICS to have a second chance, basically, at continuing to become a legitimate accreditor in the United States. So Education Secretary DeVos in April tentatively restored ASICS, came after a federal court ruled that the Obama administration had violated a federal law on the establishment of regulations, having failed to consider all relevant evidence in terminating ASICS. So a court decision basically prompted this tentative restoration of ASICS as an accreditor. So what the information in the article that sort of led to the reapproval of ASICS was that they had made major improvements, and that the court case had shown that the government had overstepped, the Obama administration had overstepped in their de-accrediting the accrediting body. But the challenge here is now with this move is what does that mean for schools like Northwest Polytechnic, which is still technically accredited by ASICS and had been under investigation by Department of Homeland Security. So this is kind of a double-edged sword for institutions like that. There's no good. The good is that if ASICS is restored, they still have license to operate. And since DHS has not removed their authority to issue I-20s, still on the Study in the States website where you can search authorized schools that are able to issue I-20s, they are still listed. Northwest Polytechnic, a rogue visa mill that had fallen afoul of the DHS, but is still in operation and approved to issue I-20s. So it's a problem on a couple different levels in the U.S. Federal government, and has been because the U.S. Department of Education and Department of Homeland Security typically aren't most interdepartmental agencies or departments in the federal government don't cooperate very well, and because they don't think their businesses overlap, but they do. And ASICS is certainly a clear indication of where that is. The interesting piece on this, the kind of flip side, was a week later, or a few days later after that initial report that ASICS had been provisionally reinstated, there was an additional story from, also covered by Inside Higher Ed, that said, oh, wait a minute, the Education Department misstated its support for ASICS. So what does that actually mean? This story, we see with ASICS You find that a senior educational department's recommendation to extend federal approval for a troubled creditor may had incorrectly attributed endorsements of that decision to several peer organizations. Politico had actually reported last week that they had never backed the move. And what this means is part of the one of the standards that ASICS had to meet to be reaccredited or reapproved as an accreditor again was that it needed to be widely recognized and accepted among other higher ed organizations. Now, what that means, Jones, who was the undersecretary, principal under, deputy undersecretary, Diane Jones, indicated that so there was support from four of the four national and five regional accreditors in the letter. And of those nine, the article reported all but one of those organizations disputed the claim. So reality is the government was basically trying to force feed ASICS reaccreditation on us without and basically saying that the regional and national accrediting agencies had said this was okay and allowable. And frankly, any of the regional accreditors who don't look too highly on what these national accreditors that promote, in ASIC's case, a lot of for-profits and particularly suspect institutions on the fringe of legitimacy, we see that they're getting basically caught out. So interesting to see that, and I'm hopeful that will put the kibosh on ASIC's return. Not sure if it will. This story might still have some life left in it, so we'll see where that goes. In terms of the second story I'd like to move on to today, this was just kind of one of those blockbuster stories that international educators last week were kind of collectively scratching their heads about. Just posted the link to that story in the Facebook page comments, and you'll see from this that this Inside Higher Ed story, there were a number of outlets that covered it. Forbes covered it. A number of other prominent national outlets covered this story, basically sharing that the current administration and White House aide Stephen Miller is notoriously hardliner in the administration for immigration policies that are severely restrictive, and was targeted because of the talk of Chinese espionage in the United States. I'm not saying there isn't any of that. Of course there is. We're doing the same in China, Russia likewise, doing the same in each of those countries. And governments around the world are doing this. But on such a massive scale where you would, this administration official decided, well, we need to ban all Chinese students. Previously, earlier in the year, there were already some new procedures in place that were put up for Chinese graduate students in certain high-tech fields where there was concerns on proprietary information, secret information being basically transferred back to China, and that espionage piece drove a lot of that initial move from the State Department. But this policy, which would have banned all Chinese students from studying in the United States, would have been the most catastrophic disaster to ever happen to international education, 10 times worse than 9/11. What it would mean is the largest single source of international students in the United States, some 350,000 as of last Open Doors numbers in November of 2017, 350,000 Chinese students and their dependents would have to leave the country. That would just be catastrophic in terms of what that means to the institutions that enroll those schools, to the communities that where these students live and pay tuition and room and board and living expenses and their money they spend in the communities. It would be just devastating. So it really just sends a real shudder through any international educator who's been in the business for more than a minute when they would think about what the potential consequences might be for their campus or their community. Just a boneheaded move and proposal on every different level that you could imagine. What thankfully, and this is for my friends in Iowa, you I know many of you know who, your former governor, Terry Branstad, but I may not be his biggest fan, but the reality is he's one of the chief proponents, according to the Forbes article that was referenced earlier. And he's one of, he's currently the U.S. ambassador to China. He basically shed the light of day on this proposal and showed it for the shining turd that it was, that this would not, this is not a viable plan just to solve a small potential problem of Chinese espionage in the United States. That's a complete overreaction, and they're not going into the political motivations for this, but that certainly, thankfully, that proposal will not see the light of day, at least at this point in time. So, but when you think about what could happen, that would be probably the worst thing imaginable for international admissions folks in the United States, in terms of the impact it would have on institutions around the country, where at some schools there may be 3,000 Chinese students studying at Illinois, University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, or Michigan State, or some other prominent schools that have over 1,000 international, 1,000 Chinese students studying on their campus. That would just be devastating to them. Departments would close in a number of different institutions. So very troubling, but thankfully for the time being, that is not going to be moving forward. So, onto a much brighter topic. For those of you who have are familiar with transnational education, this is a term that I've over the last 4 or 5 years I've become familiar with a lot of my work with the British Council and some other agencies overseas. Is you hear transnational education, is that means basically students. Students are receiving education outside, potentially in their home country, from an overseas partner. Some of the examples of this would be like Education City in Dubai, or excuse me, in Doha, Qatar. A lot of the American institutions that have set up NYU in Abu Dhabi and in China. There are other U.S. institutions that have done this for years, but. What I was shocked to learn is through this report, and I'll share the link to this article in the comments section here. This is a story from the Pi News about the UK and their transnational education numbers, where the basic gist of the story is there are now 1.6 times as many international students receiving UK education outside the UK as are receiving that education in the UK. So right now the UK has a little over 500,000 international students in the UK studying at British post-secondary institutions. The reality is outside the UK there are now, and the number is 707,000 in 2016-17, 707,000 students receiving a UK university education outside the UK. Remarkable numbers, and when you combine those two, that puts them at about 1.2 million, which is roughly the amount of international students in the United States. I've not seen a report like this on transnational education for US higher ed, but my hunch is that the UK is far and away ahead of US universities on this front. Interestingly, there are now 138 universities, British universities, in 228 locations around the world. So it's not like it's been overnight. It's only up 6 from the previous year in terms of number of universities, and only 4 new destinations over the previous year. So they have been doing this for a number of years, and with institutions in China, in Southeast Asia, they have, and in other parts of the world too. Right now, Asia does host the majority of the UK's transnational educated students, then Africa at 22%, EU 10-11%, Middle East just under 10%, U.S. about 5%. It's the numbers of students, international students studying more than likely in their home country or within their region, are receiving a British education. Over 700,000 students are currently receiving a British education outside the British Isles. So this is a remarkable number, and I would really love to see a study like this on U.S. I'm sure the numbers are going to be not even a quarter of what the U.K. has been doing. But clearly the U.K. institutions, higher ed institutions for years now, they've had to make significant investments, financial investments, faculty investments, capital investments in the building of these facilities overseas to educate these students. So interestingly, for the largest single group of the two top host countries for British educated students abroad are Malaysia at 74,000 students, over 74,000 students, and then China at just under 70,000. So really, the fascinating point here is that you're seeing the UK be able to export their educational institutions to educate students in the British system abroad, not just secondary school like GCSEs and A-levels, but now you're seeing it at the university level. And that's just phenomenal in terms of the amount of impact that those institutions, those 138 universities in 228 locations, have been able to have. And it's really a push that I think in a chapter that certainly the Brits are well ahead of the Americans on this front. There have been the odd U.S. campuses sprouting up over the past decade, but certainly not in the volume that the British universities have been able to achieve in this scope. So I think that's one of the, for those institutions stateside that are visionary enough to see the value in a degree outside their physical campus in the United States, I think those that are thinking broadly, certainly a number of campuses, Duke's opened their China campus as well, in partnership with the universities there. There are other institutions that are doing that, and I think the more institutions need to be doing that longer term. I know Webster University is one that's been around for a number of years in the United States that has campuses all around the world, physical campuses all around the world. And their students are educated with a Webster degree, get a Webster degree from any of those institutions in Vienna, in the Netherlands, in Thailand, and China, and other countries. They can go throughout the Webster system to earn degrees, to earn a Webster degree, and can be educated in a number of those different countries. So that kind of experience, I think, is really important. And where a number of the British universities have done it and been successful in is that like 44% have done so, have developed these partnerships with local educational institutions. So they're not going in on their own and just building a campus from scratch. They're really working with and partnering with local educational operators and organizations, institutions, colleges, universities to make this a reality. So very interested to see how this develops. Certainly, U.S. institutions that might see the value in not only educating students from abroad in the United States, but doing so abroad to reach a wider swath of students in different regions, I think, is a trend that is one to watch out for. And certainly, if you're at a high enough level at your institutions, maybe those discussions are already going on. But it's well worth looking into to see where that might lead. So thanks. I do want to say thank you all for who have joined me today and who are watching this either on the Facebook page or later on in the week on our YouTube channel. I definitely encourage you to keep listening and comment in, and I appreciate those that have commented. I did want to share, for those of you who hadn't seen it yet, in addition to the website that launched a few weeks ago, the new social media and international education consulting website, we've also launched a new newsletter, an e-newsletter delivered Monday mornings to your inbox. And I've just placed a copy of this week's edition from Monday It's called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. So encourage you, it'll have some of these stories in it each week that we highlight on the Wednesday live chat, but it also gives some other perspectives on social media and how that fits in with a lot of international ed stories. So I encourage you to subscribe to that newsletter, and also to, if you haven't already, checked out the international social media international education consulting website. Definitely do that as well. Great new resources on there, past presentations I've done, my ongoing blog posts and articles I write for a number of different outlets, and the services that my organization will provide for institutions and colleges around and organizations around the world looking to connect with a broader scope of international students. And there's also some testimonials on there where you can also subscribe to the newsletter. So hopefully it'll provide some great resources to you moving forward. So I invite you to check out the website. I invite you to subscribe to the newsletter. And for those of you who haven't seen the YouTube channel yet, you can always catch that on SMIE Consulting YouTube channel. And these midweek roundups, the archive of those going back to July, is available for you as well. So I want to thank you again for joining me today, and look forward to conversations down the road. Have a great day.